Good afternoon, and seeing as everybody else had to have you raise your hand, I cannot be left behind, so I'm going to do it as well. How many people are even more cold because they see me in a sleeveless shirt? I see Therese, I see a few others. I'm from Minnesota. This is probably as warmly as I can dress when I have to come down to Atlanta. Hi, I'm Wendy Sharber, and I've most recently joined the PhDSC as their outreach lead, and working to get this information out to others, get others to come in and work with us. And so I'm going to cover a couple of things that we've talked about and regarding our resource center and some of those technical tools that we're already starting to develop to move us along the way. We've got the strategic plan, we've got the resources on what's been happening, and I'm going to cover a couple others. And hopefully I will be able to do this without my glasses, but if you see me turning here, it's because I should be seeing them on the screen out there. I'm a little long-sighted nowadays. We have four modules that we have put into a resource center. Dr. Lehman covered the HIT adoption stories, and we have standards resources. We have how public health has been involved or should be involved in HIT standardization, and then the public health needs. So we're going to talk about health IT, public health IT, and the HIT standardization. You've seen the slide off to the right. That is what Dr. Olova just showed you on the various areas of standardization that have been developed and that we need to be involved in. I'm going to show you specifically what's in there. These categories, they provide definitions of terms, and then they give you very specific detailed information. I pulled out on this one standards harmonization. And so you can see what the definition is, you can see what the inclusion of the various steps are. And each of these are clickable so that you can go behind them and get more information. If you just need that top level, you're hearing about it in a conversation or on a webinar, you can get the top level definition, see what people are talking about. If you want to learn more, you can just click on through. Here's the one on data standards, and you can see that we have clicked to the Standards Development Organization, data content committees. You hear these different groups with their different organizational names, and how close are they, how different are they? It's in here. Then we also have specific standards within categories. And again, I pulled the standards harmonization example and showing that we have HITSB, we have IHE, and the SNI framework. And then as you scroll down, here are the various standard setters. These will link you to their homepage. They may link you to more of our information on how we want to show you how LOINC is used in public health, and then go off to the LOINC webpage. And then here's where we see. We did do some on these. We did some very basic synopsis, so you don't have to read everything on the X12 page to find out that this is what they are using for business transactions, order placement, processing, shipping. And see, this is more information than I knew. I think of X12 as just being the billing one for Medicare. So I'll read our own website and learn even more. Module 4 is a different module, and we do keep flipping back between Module 3 and 4, so I'm not sure that I have them exactly labeled correctly, but they're both in there. Health IT Standards Resources. What we are finding is there are some barriers to public health IT, and this comes right in Anna's business case, and I thought I'd bring this out and highlight this, of the barriers. So we thought, these are the problems, these are what we need to address, and how are we going to do that? We have a business strategy. It's in the business case. I'm not going to read it to you. But why, where, who, what, how, and even how much? We actually tried to quantify how much it costs to participate. And each of these are on our website as a full module that you can click through on the why, where, how, and find out more information. So a couple of them to show you. Here's the description that Anna showed you on the participation. I put the graph in here. It comes afterwards. But here are the numbers as far as needs and identification, priority setting, at the various levels, and you can see how many organizations are participating, that's the left set of numbers, and how many are in public health. And so I just took the bottom line number, made it bigger. Unfortunately, it didn't make it big enough for our participation. We're at 4%. And we really need to, people are putting the effort in as they get funding. And we can see as people get funding, they jump into this area and can extend on, and those that can't are following along in our tracks. But it takes the participation, not even so much the funding as the time at this point to get involved, to have your voice heard. We've got the various agencies at the level, and you can see local public health is struggling. They just don't have the time or money to be able to do this. And there's the graph for those that are graphically aware. I knew people would ask, how did we come up with that 3,900, 500? So 39,500. So I put the slide right in here. That based on participation of the PhDSC representatives at HL7, PX12, HITSB, and IHE, how much to send a quarter-time person to do the active participations in meetings and webinars and things like that, conference calls, reading documentation, attending meetings to go to those meetings, continuing education, so a total of direct cost of $39,000. All of this, again, is in the business case, so I recommend you do that. Dr. Lehman had mentioned that we did not have the QR codes or the IHE web, the PhDSC website. We have the cards with the QR codes. So if you've seen them, you click on this with your phone reader, and they will go right to the web page that you need where you can download the use case. I have some of the cards up here. Otherwise, go to our booth. Public health needs the online survey. We are hoping to do a survey to identify the needs and priorities. We've got the main columns of what we need. We want to get back into that first one to do a focused functional requirements to see what people would say, interviews, then put on an online survey for the full public health to help us identify where we need to be, and that we is the inclusive we of directing our energies together, the coordinated voice, so that they don't hear us that diabetes needs this, cancer needs this, immunization needs the other thing. They hear public health needs a series of things. And with that, I'll finish my presentation. We are ready and open for questions and comments. Thank you.
I'm going to grab the mic and thank you, Dr. Lehman. And if anyone has any questions, I'll be glad to run down.
While you're thinking about questions to ask us, two things. One is obviously all of you who said you were successful in getting your folks to do use standards, put your story up so you can be public and publicized. The other question is, you've heard us whine about how little participation there is. Let me ask you, what is the proper percent? What should we be aiming for in terms of having public health participate in this standardization? And I'm asking the question, this is not what we call pimping in clinical medicine. I really like to know what number. 4% sounds small. Is that the right number, or is that not the right number?
I think that's a great question.
Thank you.
It depends on what your denominator is.
Okay.
The way the health technology is set up in the different states, I mean, those are managed very differently as well. So I wonder, what denominator you're actually counting. I mean, is it just the state? Is it, entities within the state? Is it public health programs? Is it? So I guess, maybe I missed what denominator you're looking at right now for the 4%, but... So I think that's the first question to answer.
Right. So I don't have just to be clear, the denominator there was over all people currently, just by number of participants.
I just have a comment. Maybe what you can do is also do it by the weighted,
because some organizations already have standards, and for, by adopting these standards or making some collaborative approach to standards, that particular approach might have more impact in organizations that are widely distributed nationally than those that are just state or local ones.
And the example you're thinking about is?
I'm with the VA.
And which standards do you, are you thinking about there?
There's various standards that we follow for integration, exchange, functional, process-wide. So it's a matter of which ones are we trying to adopt and see maybe we can leverage some of that, or we can collaborate to come up with something that is and will be used nationally and in some instances internationally, because we have presence over in Manila, Germany, et cetera.
Anna, do you want to comment on the VA as a public health participant?
No, but I would like just to, welcome, everybody is welcome. I just have no say except just let's just do it together. I actually like the question that Charlie has raised. What is our denominator? Okay, and what is our numerator? What is the unit at which we should target our standardization efforts? Program? Local health department? State Health Department, CDC? I think that's the question that we need to answer. I do have my answer, but I really would like to hear what people think.
Jeanette Jackson-Thompson, I'm the director of the Missouri Cancer Registry and Research Center, funded by CDC's National Program of Cancer Registries, and PI on an CDC-funded project to bring data directly from physician offices into central cancer registries. And central cancer registries are frequently overlooked. They're not infectious disease. People think there's no urgency. But we have a long history of having standard data elements in standard data layouts. And as an epidemiologist, I would rather see a uniform data elements that cross many fields, even if it's a very limited number of data elements. And to me, the unit is the individual, the patient. That's where we have to start, with the patient identifiers and then the disease, whether it's cancer, site and histology, or diabetes. Everything has a code. It may be ICD-10, it may be ICD-010, ICD-9, LOINC, but we keep proliferating the number of elements without ever thinking about what do we need for basic public health surveillance, and what is the purpose behind each data element we collect, and are we collecting what we think we are collecting? Can we measure what we want to measure?
I agree with that. I think a minimum public health data set is something that we need to focus on that is primarily a surveillance data set, similar to what the previous speaker mentioned, because if you start catering to programs, that list will get longer and longer and longer. And yet I think there are some essential elements that that we should focus on. Also, to the slide that talked about the $39,500 cost for someone to participate. I'm currently being funded by the Medicaid to work on HIE, because there is funding from Medicaid to enable public health to connect with HIE. And I don't think that's well known among the states. And then finally, as to the unit of participation, I think we're talking about national standards, and so probably state and local participants can add to that discussion, but I think these are national level standards, and so national level organizations should be participating primarily.
Lisa, up front.
Yeah, I want to tag on what you were saying a minute ago about the purpose of the data elements. And I want to refer back to a panel on formulating business process approach to define the public health architecture. You're talking, the data is one piece of the architecture. The data is needed in order to do the public health processes, which is helping the people in the various ways that you help them. So I think it's architecture, I think it's process, and I think it's at the local level, okay? That's where the work's being done.
One of the comments as we're talking about what our denominator or numerator, just one example is at the IHE, and we sit in the quality public health, quality research and public health domain. As we work on which profiles for the next year, we vote by organization. And in this particular case, CDC gets one vote. And they are forwarding cancer registries, maternal child health, vital records. And so when multiple people are presenting these profiles to work on, this group has to come up with one voice as to where they're going to put their stickers on. You know, we do the old-fashioned, put as many stickers as you can on the profiles. And so we need the local and the state and the associations to come in and support the programs that are at CDC, and I'm not speaking as CDC, so that we can get a sense of where the community is as far as what levels and which pieces they want to move ahead. CDC can only do so much in these and being able to vote. So you're right, the national standards, once the nation says this is what the standard's going to be, that's what we're going to do. But to help inform that, they need the next levels to do that too.
No, I'm teasing you. I really like the HIT stories, and I was curious if you've looked at the HIMSS website. HIMSS has a Davies Award program that's been giving out public health awards since 2004, so that might be another source of their like 15-page applications that are, and some of them might be dated. Because they haven't been updated since the award was given out, but that might be another source of HIT stories.
Right. So I make that a required part of my course. In fact, that's part of the final project. But but the point is, it's how many applications are there posted?
There's usually like 2 to 3 awards per year since 2004.
Right. So that's about 20 examples. And we need more than 20 examples. Those are, and even the public health examples are primarily, a lot of public health, a lot of clinical care in public health examples. And in order to convince somebody in a non-clinical program about the importance of standards, they need to, my hypothesis is that it'd be more convincing if they see, and just like me, let me see somebody else just like me who's done this before I get myself all wet. So that's purely, so the Davies is a great example. I know that NORC is coming up with some examples as well. And I view these stories as mainly educational to get people along the way to see what's possible. And Anna was pointing out that it's a course, you know, if the number or the proportion of examples that are submitted every year that includes standards goes up every year, it's a course indicator that we're succeeding at getting our story out.
Yeah, the HIMSS application does have a section that requires the applicant to talk about what standards they're using, what interoperability they're trying to do or have already successfully completed.
And in a response to that, as we move the mic around, I will be going through this program here. And so anybody who's doing a presentation and they want to beat me to it and put their story in there, I'll give you credit somehow. I'm not exactly sure. But otherwise, I may be emailing you or taking the abstract in and putting some of these in, because this is a fabulous environment here where we're hearing a lot of things. And they deserve to be in there. Just, you know, even for your own program's sakes and having that in there, and for others to be able to use what you've done and not go down all the side paths you might have.
I'm Tiffany Colarusso. I've worked on the Data Standards Consortium on the birth defects domain of the functional profile. And in regards to the participation question, that's a real challenging question. I myself got involved less than a year ago because our center is trying to get birth defects into this. And I think it's partly conferences like this that will engage and encourage people. But I think in general, you know, a lot of public health, everybody's at such a different level. You've got some departments and centers at the local level and even at the state level that are just struggling to stay afloat with resources. And, you know, to put one more thing on top of it, it's a struggle. And then you have others that are working very well doing EHR, but they're in their own silo and they don't realize what else is going on around them. They have a system that works very well and HIE exchange is going on, and that's what they do. And then you have some areas at the federal level, like myself, I'm at the CDC, where sometimes things move a little slowly. And it's a little hard to get new things going and new opportunities and new ideas. And even if somebody has an idea and some of us work on it, it's really hard to get it forward to take hold. So I don't have a good answer, I guess, to answer that, to how to get it to move more quickly. But I'm encouraged, again, I think if more and more people get on the bandwagon, we can have better participation.
I will give a very simple success story that involves university, a state health department, local health departments, and hospitals, and federally funded health clinics. Every state, I believe, has a breast and cervical cancer control program. Every state has a central cancer registry. And in Missouri, I'm at the University of Missouri. I work with the Department of Health. We have colleagues at Washington University in St. Louis. We gave our data to a Washington University researcher. He identified a cluster of late-stage breast cancer. All we needed was the demographics and site and histology and stage. There was a cluster within the city of St. Louis of late-stage breast cancer. So neighborhood health centers, the local health department, the state health department, breast and cervical cancer control program, all banded together to educate patients and providers. And the next time we looked at the data, the cluster of late-stage breast cancer had disappeared. This is a true public health success story. It took standardization of data elements, but it didn't take a great deal of sophistication to bring about change that impacted the lives of the women who were diagnosed earlier and the families who did not have to suffer the heartbreak of losing a mother to breast cancer as I did, or to the loss of income, or just to the terror of a child whose mother is losing her hair. So it may be simple, and it may not be what you want, but this is what the combination of the federal, state, local, and not-for-profits and universities, everybody working together, can do.
We do want to have this story on the record.
I think sometimes people may be intimidated by the whole language of EHR.
Exactly.
I know I was, and a lot of the acronyms. And some people say, well, this is too much, too lofty. Why do we need to get involved with this? But your example is an excellent, simple, but a very true example of how EHR and systems can work together to improve the health of a population, which is what public health is.
And now we have to change our inclusion criteria for you. So thank you very much.
I actually was, can I go back to this denominator-numerator discussion? I was intrigued by your suggestion that we have to the unit of standardization is a patient. Because my strong opinion before I've heard this was that it should be a program. Cancer program, AD program, vital record program, and then they somehow normalize each other on this local, state, and federal level. But you brought up something that, in fact, maybe we are neglecting when we're working with public health, thinking that we are operating with de-identified data, forgetting that this de-identified data someday was this unit of somebody's pain, somebody's losses, or something else. I really, up to not right now, I didn't even think about that the unit of standardization should be a patient, the way it's just done in clinical care.
Oh, it's not done in clinical care because you don't see too many patients.
See, they even don't do it this way. So maybe public health will teach clinical care how to do it right. But I think having these discussions are very important because if we don't understand our metrics, what is the measure of our success? Help one person, to help a program, to help a state, to help a CDC. I think that's thing to be continued. All right.
Do consumers participate?
Me.
Hi, I'm Teresa Finitzo with Oz Systems. A little too loud here.
Okay.
You're exactly correct, Anna, that the patient ought to be...
Don't tell her.
Even when she's not correct,
I will
John
be
and
hard, I will be hard
in,
to work with.
Right? You just don't fight, Anna. That the patient ought to be the denominator. It's one patient at a time. And at the risk of now repeating myself for anybody who came by the demo earlier today, I was so impressed with Farzad Mostashari at the CDC EHR Grand Rounds when he said, for public health, it's all about the denominator, all right? And for programs that John and I are interested in, the newborn screening programs, it's every baby born in the country. It's not a particular child with a disability or with a disease. We need the accurate denominator for every baby because the other piece that we sometimes forget about public health is that many of our state programs deliver care and assure that care gets delivered. And if they don't have the accurate denominator, we cannot assure that care gets delivered.
I had to comment after you were talking about programs because I'm a vendor and I don't ignore us when you start thinking about the denominator. I have a member of an HL7 committee on my staff and I am supporting him to be part of that standards organization. And I know that many of the other vendors that you're going to see downstairs are doing the same thing, because we understand that in order for us to be successful supporting you, we've got to have standards. So there's an even bigger, and if you haven't looked at that in your numerator, you might find that there is a larger number, because some of the participation for healthcare and public health does cross.
This is a true public-private partnership growing up here. We will classify when public health vendors as public health participants right now.
Yeah, I have another question, another comment as well regarding the patient-centered care. I don't know if you've heard, but for many months now, both the VA and the DOD have been moving towards being patient-centered care and patient-centric. So we have our integrated electronic health record, which I think some of you use. We formed the NWHIN, and we've been communicating with a lot of HIEs. But we've moved towards that patient-centered care, and what you'll find is not only that from a public health perspective, but also from an administrative perspective, it's the best approach or line of visibility, because you'll see everything from beginning to end as to what the needs are for that particular person. And you'll have lots of use cases and lots of different programs, if you will, but they're all geared towards one particular view, which is the patient.
Right. And one of the things, and I'm going back to IHE because that seems to be where we can get some action on carving out a piece of a profile of a program and getting it to work all the way across the project. And what we found in our domain, and I represent the cancer domain, cancer registry domain, along with Jeanette, as we work through our profile to have the physician's report, we could go all the way back to the nationally required continuity of care document and use all of their segments for everything except the diagnosis. So we built our profile so that cancer can send its cancer information, everything else is the same. You can pull this cancer registry piece out, throw diabetes in, and pull this out. Further, within IHE, the public health and PHDSC has really been working hard on this, is to develop a single mechanism on how vendors can implement this. They know what the content is. So we've got that all down. You cut and paste whichever your program is for that one piece. But how are they going to decide what the cases are, when they're going to send, how this other? And so as you're talking patient-centric, we're trying to get a program-centric where whatever piece or noun you want to put ahead of program, it can all be standardized. The vendor can plug and play so that if they're working in an OBGYN where they have to do maternal and child health, they've got that there. Occasionally there's a cancer patient for them. The vendor can as easily have plugged that in because all the surrounding piece is already there. So as we get to this patient-centric where the Veterans Administration is moving ahead as one piece that all the patients can fit into, an idea of the programs doing the same thing. And so we have been working on that through PHDSC.
I'm going to be a little contrary here because I think because I like to be contrary, but let's not be confused about the goal of standards, which is to improve the health of individuals, where the individual should be the unit of analysis. But we're also talking about how will we know that we've succeeded in just the much lesser, let's call it a process outcome, like participation in standards development. That's the denominator we're talking about, is what percentage of that is, and the denominator there is not, I hope to God it's 350 million people going to standards development meetings, because that would really be, that would not be good, because that would decrease the health of the country in a patient-centric way. So on the one hand, the question really is, you know, are the people who participate, one thing is, are patients participating enough? So that would be an answer to that question. But the other is, are the people participating, public health, counting as agencies, programs, vendors, when is it enough on that one hand? But the other hand is, don't forget, public health is not patient-centric care, it's like person-centric something or other. It's not care, what do we call it? Right, health. So we have to. So even the VISTA model assumes that everybody is a patient. Thank you for.
Now, and when I said patient-centric, VA and DoD, we both recognize that there's more than just a patient.
Good.
So
okay.
There are. We're talking electronic health record, and as you can. Not only for patients, but also for persons. We have lots of legislation for newborns, for example, that we have to take care of as well. Yes, as patients, but maybe not as patients, just as individuals.
And I want to clarify, too, while I talk about cancer patients, linkages. Cancer registries link with vital records, that's death. Cancer registries link with the Indian Health Service to improve the quality of data on minority representation and we link with, or we hope to be linking with Medicare and Medicaid. We do link with breast and cervical cancer control programs. And so here is the intersection, and there I could go on and on about other linkages, but here is the intersection between public health and research, in that if you have the ability, if you have a small core of standardized data elements that are centered on an individual that involve, at a minimum, the demographics, then if there is disease, the disease whether it's site histology, whatever. And then, again, if it's a patient, if there is treatment, if you have your standardized core, then that can be used for public health surveillance, but you have the ability to link up with a researcher. So say, for example, I may not want to know all of the details of chemotherapy, but if I have brought in to my registry diagnostic imaging text, that then can be linked back to the images themselves, there are things that a researcher could do that I in public health or in the cancer registry might not need to have. We can link in with other, with environmental public health. For example, if there is a report of excess cancer in a particular part of a neighborhood, if we have complete, accurate, timely reporting, then you can involve DNR, DOD, you know, the Superfund sites, everything. You can bring all of this together at the patient, up to the family, to the neighborhood, to the community, to the state, and to the nation. And it doesn't work if you don't involve people who are out in the trenches, who knows what needs to be collected in order to measure whatever it is that you want to measure. Theory only goes so far. And asking us to collect everything, when we do a good job, we may end up doing a good job of nothing. So there, when you're considering standards, what is the minimum that everybody needs to have from which others can branch off?
In listening to some of the talks this morning, obviously the money is in the person-centric or basically even the patient-centric model, because the money is all coming from the healthcare sector and it's directed towards illness rather than wellness. In some of the work we've been doing in the consortium, and even in talking to people yesterday, the obesity epidemic is one of the things. So one of the things that public health is looking at is food supply, not just for obesity. They're looking at hunger. Hunger is a problem in a lot of cities like the one that I come from. So these aren't even measuring something that you attach to a person, but you attach it to a location. And, you know, like walkability, all of these kinds of things that they're talking about that are on the health side are other kinds of artifacts. And we haven't even talked about factoring those kinds of things in because they're not really part of this discussion. But as the standards consortium and looking ahead, we have to be thinking, how do we match some of these artifacts or objects with people?
Right, and that's, and I appreciate bringing that up. It's those sort of non-person, there's sometimes there are attributes of a population that are not summed over individuals. And I don't think the standards-setting bodies understand that. I don't know if, I can't tell a good story whether EPA cares about health reporting standards for the numerator when they're using the water rays as their denominators, but that's something that the public health community has to figure out.
I'm surprised that Dr. Arts is not making any comments.
He left.
But what I would like just to introduce two distinguished consortium members, also two people who really made this project to be a success. Dr. Noam Arts, HLN consultant, and Ms. Vicky Honor, another project team member that all the acknowledgments and thank you is going to you, helping us through this project and continue to help us through this project. And as Dr. Arts pointed lately on one of our project team calls, everything we're talking today were about interoperability standards. But should we begin talking about standards in the broader perspectives? And that's what they are. What are they then be? So we're planning to have, in fact, these discussions at the PhDSC annual meeting in October. So just this is not the last presentation that we're doing on this business case. We're going to revise it to make it just a further to become a methodology for public health participation in HIT standardization. And we look forward for your input to help us to develop the metrics of the success of our participation.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you.